had his boots last Sunday. It was his last Sunday to teach. In here, I heard he made the chair.
You're Richard, your parent, you're Richard. Yeah, this is, Cheerwine is one of my favorites. That's one of my weird habits is as I travel. I like Ricky Marks, I like the little gas station, convenience stores and stuff like that. Nothing says more about America than me. I sell anything and everything. Yeah, a lot of it's higher. Different places you go have different stuff. The lab I work in, I was in college, we go across the street. They would have RC in an ice cooler. I always had these cans like RC, and it was a quarter. Usually the cans had rust on them, so we had no idea. Half the time they were flat. But it had a quarter, and it was hot, so we drank that. But they had this open air bin of beef jerky, and they were Indians. So it was really weird that they sold the beef jerky, and it was even weirder, it was unwrapped. Self-cured beef jerky that was just kind of had a little cover where you could open up and pull out beef jerky. Anyways, in the Carolinas, you will find soda called Cheerwine. And Cheerwine is a cherry soda. They started to get it in more and more areas. When I first drank it in the Carolinas, it was probably the bubbliest soda I've ever had. Since then, I've had that. It's not nearly as bubbly. Anyways, I was with the kids yesterday. We were coming off the airport. We went to Sanford, and we accidentally found a place to eat. And they had this stack of Cheerwine. They had Cheerwine in glass bottles on ice. I was like, wow, that'd be a good place to eat. They have this available. So, anyways, first of all, PDQ. People desiring quality, or people, I don't know, something like that. It was chicken tenders. We love those. One lady told me it was like Chick-fil-A. Apparently, she's never looked into a Chick-fil-A. I said it was only different because the kids liked it. So anyway, it was different. They had cornhole outside. The kids played cornhole. They actually put real. They actually had engineered straws for milkshakes. They were, I told Steve, they're 40 caliber. They're big diameter, big thick straws for milkshakes. So they didn't collapse and all the stuff in which it didn't get all clogged up. So anyways, it was chicken tenders, but it was whatever. So anyways. See how this applies to that. So, obedience of the, anybody want to guess how to say that word?
Rechabites.
Rechabites.
That's how I'd say it.
Anybody else want to take another guess? Somebody's got to say Rechabites. Rechabites.
Rechabites.
No,
it's Rechabites.
Oh, yeah, that fourth syllable. Rechabites. Yeah. You know, I had to ask me how to say her name. When I first met her, I've only seen them on emails and stuff like that. So I had to ask her how to say her name. Is it Camille? Is it Camille? As I went to Alabama to meet her, I found out it's really like four syllables. It's Camille. It's really the appropriate way to say it. So that's how our friends said it. So, anyways. Yeah, so, you know, we'll call them Rechabites, we'll call them whatever. I don't speak Hebrew. So, whatever. So, anyways. About 10 ways to do this lesson, and I don't know, maybe I will repeat myself, maybe I won't. We'll see how it goes. Lay it out like it is.
It's tied to the slideshow. So anyways, Ecclesiastes 12:14.
God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. God knows our hearts, he knows things that only we know about ourselves. Because he knows our hearts, sometimes he uses them as examples for others to consider. You think of me, but he uses our heart or he can use someone's heart as an example. It might be something in the Bible, or you might have a personal story how somebody's life.
On the flip side, you can talk about David. God called him a righteous man, but yet he did some funny stuff.
You know,
apparently he knew his heart.
Yeah, you're right. He knew his heart and he displays that. He also displays his faults because right, we all have faults in us, so that's a good point. Probably not as much as David, I don't think. I like to think my faults aren't as grand as his are, but I don't know.
You can say Paul's heart.
Yeah.
doing what he was doing, whatever he did, his heart was after God. It was just his understanding of what God wanted was false. And then when basically God hit him in the head with a 2x4, he got his attention. He said, no, that's not. Why are you persecuting me? So, but it was a man whose heart was after God that said, I'm going to change so radically, people won't believe it.
It did. You're right, Satan. You see his heart as he's against Christ, against the church. You see that heart and he's set in what his way was. He alludes to what his heart was as a Jew, as a Pharisee.
Okay.
He said, swap.
I just thought of something. David really got in trouble when he tried to hide his heart from God. When he tried to hide his sin for a year or two.
Sure. Yeah.
So because God knows what we do before we do it. So maybe the worst thing to do is trying to hide it.
Yeah. When I guess you really went ahead and see that with Cain and Abel. Where's your brother? God or Adam. After he's the fruit.
Right. So maybe though some people aren't perfect, they don't try to hide it. They admit their faults. On the flip side, when you try to hide them, maybe it just gets worse.
There's stuff we all know. You know about yourself that maybe nobody else knows. Maybe nobody else has figured out. And that'd be a sin that you're hiding with just the character and stuff. There are people who are such an open book that with almost never just. There's too much on some of those people.
Mary, the mother of Jesus, I think is another one where he looked at Mary and knew that she was the one to bear the son, even though she was a virgin and espoused to another man.
Yeah, well, she was a virgin, although she was engaged to another man, although she was really.
Joseph also.
I'm out of here. I'm leaving in one night. Yeah, you're going to stick around. That lesson, I've taught it before, but that lesson awakened my heart as I was in Arkansas.
Guy taught that on Mother's Day, and a lot of the way, it was a very, very poor area, and they say it's the heart of the meth trade on that side of Mississippi. Anyways, a lot of single moms, a lot of people who, it was a church in the projects is what it was. And it really hit me with, because that way it hit them, that, you know, I'm the mother of this child. It might be, you know, but anyway, that story, it was an example that I saw around me, how I took it to heart. It's a story that I'd heard 100 times. Chuck?
I kind of bring it back a little bit to what we're studying. King Josiah went through, and when they found the scrolls, and when they read it, of course, he was very upset. But you can see his heart because he went through and did something about it. He cleaned the temple out. He restored the worship. He went through in all the high places, which was a lot of them.
Yeah.
And he destroyed all the Asherah. He destroyed all the temples, all the altars of Baal. And he took a country and made a huge change and said, this is the right thing to do. That's good. That could be risky.
Even as king.
Yeah, even as a king, that could be risky.
Yeah, they've overgrown kings before.
I don't think that even entered his mind. He said, this is what we need to do.
This is what's going to happen. Yeah.
You can see his heart.
Now, a lot of it's like that. It's recorded for us to look at. The New Testament is 2,000 years old. Some of these other parts of it are 3,000, 4,000 years old, more. So, yeah, it's even recorded for us to look at. Anybody got any other ones? No other examples? I got a couple. The rich young ruler, the heart that he had, he wanted to follow Christ, but he wasn't willing to give up what he had. The woman at the well, seemed like her position, I mean, Jesus read, he knew more about her than she was willing to put out ahead. Lady with the alabaster jar, everybody else saw one thing in her. Jesus saw another. Ananias and Sapphira in the New Testament. Well, I guess it was all in the New Testament. Anyways, Ananias and Sapphira. They said they sold a piece of property and they gave all the money to the church. Except they didn't. So anyways, the heart really showed, and that was an example to everybody else. So Like I said, the Bible's full of them. The Bible is an example. Job is probably the biggest example. And it starts out in Job 1:8, and the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil." Anyways, today's lesson, God uses the Rechabites, the nomadic people, to teach a lesson to the inhabitants of Judah. And that's where we're going to go from there. In Jeremiah 35:6, all today's text will be Jeremiah 35. I say that, but I'm sure I'll stray here and there. We will drink no wine, for Jonadab, son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, "You shall not drink wine, neither you nor your sons forever. You shall not build a house, you shall not sow seed, you shall not plant or have a vineyard, but you shall live in tents all your days, that you may live many days in the land where you sojourn." So Jonadab was an ancestor of the Rechabites, who lived around 250 years earlier. Am I saying that right? Jonadab? Anybody else know?
Jonadab?
Jonadab? Jonadab? Can I say it in Alabama?
Jonadab.
Jonadab. All right. So what kind of prohibitions had he put his family on? What had he commanded his family to not do? I don't see a whole lot of things that you should do, but more what you shouldn't do.
Don't drink wine.
Don't put down any roots at all. Yeah, there's two kinds of roots there. Your own roots, or don't grow anything. All right. I guess actually that kind of covers it all right there. Don't put down roots. So, yeah. So anyways, this is a command that he gives to his family about 250 years earlier. Why do you think he gave them this list? Why do you think he asked them? He didn't ask them, I don't think. Yeah, because it's commanded. Why do you think he had his family do this?
Well, the last sentence says that you may live many days.
Okay.
In the land where you sojourn.
That's a good answer right there. Ought to be, right? It's written down for us to look at. So they'll live many days. Yeah, in the land they sojourn. So they're going to travel, but they're going to live long in that. What do you think he saw? There's really no right answer because it's not recorded here. Why do you think? Do you think God passed this on to him? Hey, do you think to do this? Did I get it right? Written down or not? Yeah, I guess some of the commentaries, perhaps in the F.B. Huey's commentary on Jeremiah and Lamentations, perhaps Jonadab became repulsed and disillusioned by the corruption and immorality he saw in the city life, and determined to separate himself and his family from its evil influences. So he might have saw something like that. Might have. You know? We don't really know. My personal leanings, God's providence. It's kind of like you see in the book of Ruth. How did it go from her living in Moabite to being in the lineage of Christ? And it's these little things that God provides. And the direction things were going got turned just a little bit. It could have been this. The command that came from Jonadab, he might not have known it came from God. It might have came from what he saw. But I'd say God used that to put his plan in motion. This is just one of the little kinks, one of the little turns. When you look back on it, you can't miss it. So anybody else got, and does anybody have, do you have family traditions like this? Something that's been passed down. Probably not for 250 years. Although if you do, if you've got something that's been passed down for 250 years, I'm very impressed. Do you have family traditions or something like that that's been passed down through your family? It doesn't have to be something like this, but is Chuck a Gators fan because his dad was a Gators fan?
No.
Oh, absolutely not.
No, he was a Hurricane.
Hurricane.
Oh, well, Weldon and I have the Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, St. Louis Cardinal. Because your parents, St. Louis Cardinal.
My father was born in St. Louis.
There you go.
Well, so, that was the only ball team that we could find on the radio.
I was a Braves fan because they were on TV every single night through the summer. Yeah. Now baseball's not on TV every single night, so I don't follow it that well at all. Anybody got anything else? Chuck?
Tradition, I guess, that's come down, and it's what you're partly when they get old, they can't take care of themselves. I started with my grandmother. She took care of her mom in the house. My mom helped my grandmother take care of her sisters in her house, and I take care of my mom in my house. I would say that's kind of a,
the
example, an expectation.
Yeah, the example's already been set. This is, I've already seen it in play, and what's happened a couple generations. And Camille's a social worker. Her specialty is dementia because of a grandmother that lived with them that had dementia. Actually, they had both grandmothers live at their house. One lived with them for 27 years, and the other one lived with them for 13 years. And so when I married Camille, they'd been married almost 40 years. And Howard, her dad, told me that I think they had had merely months in that 40 years without one of the grandmothers living with them. One had lived there so long and she died, and the other one finally brought her in. The second grandmother died, and he says, we're free, we don't have them there, all the kids are out, we're going to travel. They were going to go to Branson for their anniversary, and they're going to come see us. And he passed away 2 weeks later. So they got a family that in the 40 years they were married, they really had very little time, and they didn't have a grandmother in their house. And in all honesty, we will probably, at some point, clean out a bunch of our junk, and we will bring in one of our parents, or more. That'll probably happen. Just, that's something I've actually learned from Camille, but you know, like I said, the background she's had. Bob?
And another thing is the religion. You know, your parents bring you to church,
typically,
so automatically you're into it.
Typically, you're right. That's a common way. Why am I Baptist, Catholic, Church of Christ? Because mom and dad were, because their parents were. And that's a lot of Christianity in America is based on that's what I've been exposed to. And there are a few people who've broken that mold, people that have started their own path. But yeah.
Say our parents couldn't be wrong. You know, our parents wouldn't say this.
Sure.
Maybe they didn't know or something.
Maybe they didn't know. They didn't look at the Muscle and Shovel book, that guy, the author in there, deals with that same thing. You know, if I believe what the Bible's showing me, I have to say that my parents didn't believe the Word of God, even though they might not have been exposed to it, although someone might have taught it differently. You know, but some of that is, he sees that kind of thing. So, yeah.
That's true, yeah. Maybe you don't even get a chance. Like you say, if they didn't go, if they didn't believe, put you in a bad spot yourself.
It is. Today's tonight's graduates, I mean, Elijah's one of our graduates we're honoring. He came here without a family. You know, he's come here for almost 7 years. With, you know, his family is his three brothers come with him. So even like tonight, it won't be a family that puts together his thing. It won't be family that stands up and says something about Elijah. You know, it's me. It's Matt. We're family, those boys, but it's a different kind of family. Politics falls the same way. A lot of people are Democrats or Republicans because that's what Dad was. That's what Mom was. My house, when I was in college, I signed up at a lab for CAD, computer aided design. They needed somebody to monitor the lab. If somebody would sit in there for a couple hours, they'd give you a key, and you had to first use the best computer or whatever. But we kept going a lot of hours, the student run, and I took shift from 5 to 8 in the morning, and that's with an hour's travel time from Titusville to Melbourne. And one of our professors said, did you grow up on a farm? Because he says, there's nobody gets up that hour to do that. And I was like, metal farm, you know, we were working in a machine shop, and it's always been that way. But mom and dad grew up on a farm, and that's how it works. So it's one of the possibilities, one of the things that we've passed down. So there's a lot of this kind of stuff. Good and bad, unfortunately. Today's lesson doesn't focus on the reasoning behind these instructions, but rather the unfailing obedience. The Rechabites kept the decrees of Jonadab for centuries, even when tempted to do otherwise. Their obedience stood in stark contrast to Judah's unwillingness to obey the instructions of the Lord. And that's really the key to it. So even if you miss everything else, that's it. Hebrews 12:9-10, Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. The same principle is used in the New Testament to encourage our submission to God. If we obey our human fathers, whether it's, you know, whether it's family or whether it's our boss or the principal at school or whatever, shouldn't we obey our Father in heaven? God desires our obedience. It doesn't force us into it. Example of Rechabites with a willingness to remain faithful. God desires the same dedication for those who will follow him. So there's my whole outline. So we're going to look at 16 verses. The Rechabites seek safety, the ways of the Rechabites, and the example of the Rechabites. Or you can ignore that entirely, and we're just going to go verses 1 through 16. So I thought I'd read it first. And the reason for this, you can get to verse 2, and you're going to say, one, I've never seen this story before. Anybody ever seen the story of the Rechabites? I don't think we studied Jeremiah very much. No? Good. I'm not the only one. All right. So I started reading the text. I got to verse 2, and I said, whoa, that's weird. So anyways, I want to show the whole text, and then we'll go through it from there. Anyone want to read it? It's got the great possibility of some Hebrew names that you ain't going to pronounce right. We can read it? Go ahead. Go ahead and read this, and we'll read through these verses.
The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. Go to the house of the Rechabites and speak with them, and bring them to the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers. Then offer them wine to drink.
Okay, verse 3.
So I took Jazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Abazaniah, and his brothers and all his sons and the whole house of the Rechabites. I brought them to the house of the Lord into the chamber of the sons of Hanan, the son of Idaliah, the man of God, which was near the chamber of the officials, above the chamber of Maaseiah, the son of Shalom, keeper of the threshold.
I think you did great.
I think she needs a whole bag of
chips. When we taught Joshua, when we had it for last leader, we taught it in a lot of the classes all at the same time. But one of the things we did back into there is, it's a website, there's several of them, but how to pronounce Hebrew names and everything. And what we did was we played a game called Say It or Spray It. And we'd flash a name up there, and one of the kids would have to say it, or attempt to say it, and then we would play how it's supposedly pronounced. And some of those names in Joshua, because it does the land division and everything, some of those names are terrible. But they had a lot of fun. The guys and the kids had the best time doing that. The wives thought it was the stupidest thing we've ever done. So, look forward to doing that again. It's going to happen. I think it would be a great fellowship thing. All right, 5 through 7. I think we're done with the crazy names, I promise. I think. Then I set before the Rechabites pitchers of full wine and cups, and I said to them, drink wine. But they answered, we will drink no wine, for Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, you shall not drink wine, neither you nor your sons forever. You shall not build a house, you shall not sow seed, you shall not plant or have a vineyard, but you shall live in tents all your days, that you may live many days in the land of your servant. Verse 8, we have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, and all that he had commanded us, to drink no wine all our days, ourselves, our wives, our sons, and our daughters. Not to build houses to dwell in. We have no vineyards or field or seed, but we have lived in tents and have obeyed and done all that Jonadab our father commanded us. But when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came upon the land, we said, come, let us go to Jerusalem for fear of the army of the Chaldeans and the army of the Syrians. So we are living in Jerusalem. Verse 12, and the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, go and say to the people of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, will you not receive instruction and listen to my words, declares the Lord. The command that Jonadab, the son of Rechab, gave to his sons, drink no wine, has been kept. And they drink none to this day, for they have obeyed their father's command. I have spoken to you persistently, but you have not listened to me. Verse 15, I have sent to you all my servants and prophets, sending them persistently, saying, Turn now, every one of you, from evil, his evil way, and amend your deeds. Do not go after the other gods to serve them. Then you shall dwell in the land that I gave you and your fathers. But you did not incline your ear or listen to me. The sons of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, have kept the command that your father gave them, but this people has not obeyed me. Therefore, thus says the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I am bringing upon Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem all the disaster that I have pronounced against them. Because I have spoken to them, they have not listened. I have called to them, and they have not answered. All right, we want to summarize that.
Well, he showed them that that these people listened to their earthly father. How much more should he have listened to your godly father?
Yeah. He tested them to show, you know, I'm not going to tell you that they follow what they followed for 250 years. We're going to bring it in here. We're going to show you that it happens. Now go tell them, these people are faithful enough to listen and follow and obey. Something simple like this. Word coming out from me, from God, why won't you listen? And it says, you haven't listened, so it'll be problems. All right, now we'll start looking at it a little deeper. In verse 11, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came upon the land, we said, come, let us go to Jerusalem for fear of the army of the Chaldeans and the army of the Syrians. So we are living in Jerusalem. So these guys are nomads. They have no roots. They have no tents. They have no crops. So why are they in Jerusalem? Protection. Fortify the city. Yeah. You're out there by yourself. I don't know. How big of a group could you possibly be? I mean, it's not. I don't think it's going to be thousands of them living together.
We see that going on right now with a lot of refugees all over the world.
Sure.
To avoid the high spots.
That's what you got to do. Avoid the high spots.
Do I understand this right? They were told not to trek wide, and they kept on keeping that commandment.
Yep.
But they were told to live in tents.
Yep.
And they're not living in tents.
They still might be living in tents, to be honest. They might be still in tents. I would probably say these people probably found an empty lot somewhere and still are living in tents. But, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really say. It does say they're living in Jerusalem.
Didn't the last verse you read say God said that they were still obeying the public?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much implied.
I think it's implied, yeah. They kept the command and their father gave them, but the command of the people, but the Judah people have not obeyed, verse 16. So yeah, I would say they're still in tents, some way or somehow. So I see pictures of Jerusalem and stuff, it looks pretty crowded. I don't know anything better to say than crowded. I would say there's still space somewhere and they can live in tents. People that live on the Walmart parking lot and RVs. So.
Yeah, same thing.
Why not, right?
Well, they also pay a ground and pitch their tents outside of the wall.
Just
to be close, so if the army showed up, they could get inside the wall quickly.
It could be too.
You know, you really don't know whether they're in the wall, inside the wall, or outside the wall.
Yeah, if you watch TV like Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune, where are you from? Nobody's ever from Titusville or something like that. They're from Orlando, from a big city, you know, because everybody can go, okay, I know where that's at. So like I said, it might not be inside the line for Jerusalem, but
well, here. I tell a lot of people I live in Titusville, and I'm surprised at how many people know where Titusville is.
There you go. That's some people do. That's I don't say any differently. That's just where we are. I mean, you're an hour from anything, but, you know, it's Titusville. Kirk grew up in a small town. What's your town called?
Marbury. Not to be confused with Mayberry. Mayberry was bigger than Marbury.
Mulberry is even smaller.
Yeah. I grew up in, well, I didn't, when we before we moved here, I was from a place called Smith's Crossing, which is where the road crosses the railroad tracks. Don't think there's a stop sign or anything there. I think it's a yield. But I went to the same school Mom did, who's the same school that Grandma did. And I missed having the same teacher Grandma had in first grade by 1 year. We went to a school that's no longer there. It's called New Point, Indiana, which I don't think New Point's on any map either. You're going to have to call for Greensburg the whopping 5,000 person town that it is. So. Yeah. Where are you from?
To Vincennes.
Vincennes? Oh, Vincennes, Indiana? Uh-huh. Yeah, I know where it's at. I've been there.
Ruth's sister.
That's where she's from? I don't think that's too far from there, is it?
Yeah. I'm from a little city called Miami.
The little city.
But you're not Hispanic.
Not always called Miami, though. Just the last 100 years it's been called Miami. Yeah.
Since Flagler put the railroad in.
Yeah, since Flagler put the railroad in. That book, A Land Remembered, that I read. Phil and Betty have read it. It was called something else at that point in the book, even, and then they named it after the Indian guy. Anyways, yeah, the place has changed. So, growing threat of Babylonians, they probably sought the protection of the fortified city. Back to verses 1 and 2, the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, go to the house of the Rechabites and speak with them and bring them to the house of the Lord into one of the chambers and offer them wine and drink. Like I said earlier, you get to that point in it and you say, that is just weird, isn't it? So, what's weird? What did God tell him to do? What did God tell Jeremiah to do? No guys are nearby. Bring them in and offer them wine. He didn't offer them a big stack of cheer wine, which I would have came for. But bring them in here and drink. Offer them wine. Is it, anybody else think this is weird?
No, he knew
how
it turned out. It was an example.
Yeah, God knows how it turns out. But I mean, I'm reading it, and I get to verse 2, and I think, I don't know how it turns out. I've never seen this story before. And I just like, it's just weird. It hit me weird there. Yeah, once you get past that, you see it. But it hit me weird at the time.
I don't think it's weird because that's consistency with God. He shows that it can be done, so you have no excuse.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Christ becoming flesh.
Yeah.
He had to become like us.
He came up with this.
We could do it.
Tempted by everything. You see it with Satan tempting
him. Consistency. Well, it's an example, but
it
seems
example.
To be a way he does it a lot of times.
That's the way parables were done in the Old Testament, right?
yeah, they weren't just parables. They were
going to do this.
It actually happened. All right, I'm going to throw away one of your coins. I'll search the house for it. Take away one of your sheep. Jeremiah's offer to the Rechabites should not be interpreted as placing a stumbling block in front of a weaker brother. And cites Romans 14. His actions are not intended to entice these men to sin. God, and likely Jeremiah, knew the Rechabites were committed to rigid rules, including abstaining from wine. This directive was to give them to God through Jeremiah, given by God, to God through Jeremiah, in order that the loyalty and obedience of the Rechabites might be vividly portrayed. And I think the note said, don't try to use this to say that God condones recreational use of alcohol. And there's a whole study on that.
No, we could turn it into a stumbling block.
You could turn it into a stumbling block.
Right.
And it can
otherwise,
be.
You're not going to go to heaven if you drink wine.
There's that.
That's a stumbling block.
It can go both ways. And there's a whole study and there's a whole.
We do that with traditions. We turn traditions into stumbling blocks. Yeah.
It's when and where and how and the whole. Like I said, that's not what this lesson's about. No. It's probably not a good thing to try to use it as this says. So, anyways, he's testing the resolve. You see, he brings them in. He offers them wine, tells them to drink it. The wine that's there is probably from tithe offerings of the people. They seem to be there. The priest had it. They offered it to the needy members of society, according to Timothy Willis, College Press NIV commentary. I know from any study I've done on ancient times, the wine was watered down and not of high alcohol content by any means. So, and actually frowned upon to be such. What was that like? Anyways, so in response, tells them to drink wine. But they answered, we will drink no wine for Jonadab, the son of Rechab. We've been through that a couple times. So what their response is no, this is not how we do things. We were instructed years ago, and this is what we've kept. We're not going to do it. Jonadab was in the king of time of King Jehu. He helped eradicate the Baal worship at that time. And there's actually a thing in 2 Kings 10. His name's spelled a little different. Jehonadab. But anyways, it seems to be the same guy. He helped wipe out Baal at that time. You might have seen some of these commentaries. When Israel settled in Canaan and began to live a sedentary life, to practice agriculture, they encountered a Canaanite culture and religion. Increasingly, they were drawn to the fertility god Baal, whom the Canaanites turned to bless their crops and flocks and were tempted to accept the religion of Canaan. And that comes from J. Thompson, the book of Jeremiah, and his commentary. And you can kind of see this. If you're living there and you see how the Canaanites are living, you might tie, if we're around them too much, we'll be influenced by them. And that might have created his call to not stay in one place, to keep moving, to stay away from what was causing their problems. Like I said, it doesn't seem to be a direct command from God, but he does use it in his providence to get to where he needs it to be. So, could they have justified it? Even though they've always done it this way, prophet from God brings them into the temple and tells them to drink this wine. Could they have justified doing something different than they'd always done?
Some people do that today, saying, "I'm always sociable."
Yeah,
but this is on Facebook because everybody else is.
Yeah. This is even just different than that. This is in the temple by a man of God. Could they break tradition? Just here. They could probably justify that, right? They didn't, and God uses that.
The prophet offered this to us.
Yeah. The prophet offered it to us. It's in the house of God. But they didn't, and that's the whole...
Well, I think they did the right thing.
They did the right thing. They did the right thing by not justifying it. And God knew they wouldn't, and it works out that way.
Say this, the reason God brought up these people was for this
he knew they would be that
as an example.
Yeah, he knew it was that way, and they held that.
But they still had a free will in the matter.
They had absolutely free will. They could have gone either way they wanted to. This is just, this is how we do things.
This is a good lesson, though, where it shows you have to read the whole story to get what the lesson was. If you just took the first part, you'd think God wanted them to drink the wine.
Yeah. You would stop right there.
But in the whole story, you find out what the lesson was, that he was showing them
he knew
what it means to obey the law.
Sure. And it has nothing to do with the wine at all. It's just, it has to do with the fact that they would be faithful to who they were and what they had already done. Anyways, he tells Jeremiah, use this for the people. Show that, these people kept their traditions, even when they could have probably opted out, even though they could have justified it differently. They've done this. These are, and it's not even a word of God that's passed down. It's a tradition. It's something that they stuck to. Go ahead, Chuck.
I'm just kind of wondering, also, God's using this through Jeremiah to point to people who are nomads, who are probably poor, and move around all the time. And so the contrast here is God is looking at those people saying, at least they have integrity, okay? Strong integrity. They're falling from 250 years ago out of respect, that father. And he's I'm sure if they're just outside of the walls in Jerusalem or wherever they are, look at those idiots in the tents, okay? And now God's holding them up as an example to say, you ought to be more like them. And I'm sure that it's got some attention to some of the people in Jerusalem saying, you're comparing me to that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the New Testament's full of that. How many times Jesus points to people condemned by society? You want to get to heaven? You got to be like a child. You want to come to heaven? You got to be like this prostitute. You got to be like this woman who's been married 5 times. You got to be like the tax collector to climb the tree. You got to have this. And he points to people that everybody else is like, oh, not them. Yeah, that's a good point. I really like that. Their heart and their point to that. And you're like I say, it's Jerusalem. God lives in Jerusalem. He's there. And they don't listen to him. They don't listen to his prophet. They've seen Israel itself, Israel proper, destroyed. And they know that it's coming, that they're going to be destroyed. And it doesn't seem to faze any of them. So it brings this example. Like I said, it turns out that you're not listening, so I'm going to bring destruction upon you. God did not merely state truths to his people, he illustrated them. Like you said, I think Kirk pointed out, good, that's how he did parables. He didn't just talk about it. Here, we're going to just show it right here. We're going to bring it to life.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like Hosea's very similar like that, you know, with the whole situation with his marriages and wife cheating on him frequently. All that was used as an example to say, this is what you're doing, Israel. This is what you're doing to your Lord.
Yeah.
You know, with all these idols and stuff you're worshiping, you're basically having an affair on the Lord. And that's essentially what Hosea boils down to. And so, yeah, you know, you jokingly said, you know, throw away the coin type deal. I mean, that's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
Thus, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah saying, take your coin and toss it somewhere in the house. Now, sweep up your house and go find it. That's very similar to what's going on.
It is. So, anyways, that's point simple. Rechabites could be obedient to Jonadab's commands. People should be able to do the same with God's commands. Even with the Rechabites and their where that came from, although it wasn't really the focus of the lesson, although it probably came out way too much, if we abstain from things that cause us to be associated with sinful practices of the world, how different would we be? And that would be, how would that affect us? How would that change us? That'd be something to carry. So, anyways, next week, Chuck's teaching next week, price of being a prophet, Jeremiah 38, 2 through 13, and 17 through 20. Kevin's going to teach the following week. So Kevin hasn't taught in here for a long time, so help him out.
What's the significance of drinking cheer wine?
Cheer wine. That's good soda. Cherry soda.
And you heard of
it? No, I had some yesterday.
Is that black cherry cherry?
I don't know. Yeah, I know they get the black cherry soda and stuff like that. It could be.
Yeah.
No, I don't put peanuts in it.
We
did come back.
But it was flavored wine.
I did. Even if you had to spend your days by yourself.
Yep. Oh no, nobody was home.
They work. Oh.
That's the trouble. Visiting
them. And I don't know, that's why Lord wouldn't go up there. He said they're not so.